Okay, the clock has struck 8 p.m. in Yerushalayim, 1 p.m. on the eastern seaboard of the United States and Canada. So we will begin. Last week, we dealt with the question, who knows four? We dealt with the insights to certain mitzvot or the key mitzvot of the Seder night as expressed in the Manashtana. We pointed out that the questions of the Manashtana are fundamentally questions of halachot, of dinim. And I mentioned that this will give us the entree to today's topic, which is the next category of four, and that is the four sons, the Arba Abanim, subtitled Divergent Models in Jewish Education. Our Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik always pointed out that the Seder is a model lesson, as we know that phrase from school. When somebody comes to give an audition to be a teacher, he gives a model lesson before the principal. Leila Seder, Seder night, is a model lesson in Jewish education. And there are many, many aspects of the Seder that have to be cut and pasted upon our educational process. And as we know, we do not have stereotype children, and we should never even strive to have stereotyped children, but rather each child should strive to develop his or her own unique character and talents. Therefore, the educational system, which is not a private system, but nevertheless, should somehow focus upon the individual needs of various students. And to that end, we're going to see four basic categories of models in Jewish education as expressed by the Arba Abanim, the four sons. Now, the number four, who knows four? So it was an arbitrary way of linking three topics, which indeed have connections, but one, the Manashtana, the four questions, two, the four sons, three, next week, the four cups. Obviously, they're interrelated, but the truth of the matter is we can actually upgrade to who knows five. Because as we saw last week, the four questions that we have in our Haggadah, so we're missing a question. The Rambam, when he presents the Seder night as if Beit HaMikdash is up and running, he gives us the five questions. And the fifth question, obviously, is that question that relates to the Korban Pesach. And the Rambam tells us that we don't say that, we don't ask that question today because there is no Korban Pesach. So the five was reduced to four. But I did mention that there is an extant manuscript of an illuminated manuscript of the Haggadah from Germany in the 13th century, I believe. And there apparently was some community that refused to give up on the question of the Korban Pesach. And the question was part and parcel of the Manashtana. And of course, we cannot answer Halayla Zeh Kulot Sli, and tonight we're just eating roast because there was no Korban Pesach. But what replaced it was in the days of temple days, we would have been eating now kulot zli, the korban pesach that was completely roasted. So in fact, there are five questions. So there are five questions in the Manashtana. There are actually five cups, except that we only drink four of them. And the fifth one is placed as a koshel Eliyahu. The next week we'll talk about the symbolism of that cup and why the Rambam tells us that there were some communities that actually did drink a fifth cup of wine at the Seder night. And there are some people here in Eretz Israel who actually conduct themselves accordingly and drink five cups, not four cups. The same thing with the four sons. So in the Haggadah, we only have four sons. That's the honest truth. And we're going to have to manufacture a fifth if we're going to maintain the symmetry of Chamisha Miyadeya, who knows five. I heard from a very, very good rabbi in the United States, passed away just a few years ago, Rabbi Izzy Miller, Zichrono Livracha. He was vice president of Yeshiva University and a shul rabbi, a very, very, very experienced shul rabbi in the Bronx in New York City. And he said, yes, there is a fifth son. And the fifth son is that son who doesn't even show up to the Seder. The four sons, even the Rasha, who we try to put him down in a sense, but at least he's sitting there at the Seder. And the She'eino Yodei Lishol, the one who does not have enough curiosity and or intelligence to even ask the question, so he's for sure at the Seder, but there is a son who's not even at the Seder. somebody who's completely torn away from not only the family, but from Am Yisrael, that is a very tragic scenario that unfortunately exists in families today, where a son or daughter is not even part of the Seder at all. There are some people who are not religious people, but at least out of respect to parents who do keep a Seder, so they'll come to the Seder. Okay, so then you can negotiate with them about the relevance of the Seder. But a son or daughter who doesn't even see fit to come to the Seder, that's a slap in the face, not only to the parents, but also to the entire tradition, a total rejection. And unfortunately, that son exists, not only today, but apparently it existed even in the days of Mitzrayim, where our Chachamim teach us that based on the Pasuk in Parshat B'Shalach, V'chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim, it literally means that they left equipped with arms to do battle. But the word chamushim is a play on the word five, and Rashi tells us one out of five went out. And four out of five, Rashi says, they died in the plague of darkness. And every darshan, every homiletic expert has already said that the dying in the plague of darkness means ignorance to tradition. And there are so many people today dying in the plague of darkness, the absence of any light of Torah. And the Chachamim were teaching us that 80% of Am Yisrael never even came out. And they were totally assimilated, totally lost. And Rashi is really doing a chesed by telling us one out of five went out. Echad mechamishim, 20%. There's another view in the Medrash that says Echad mechamishim yatza, one out of 50. That means 2% went out and 98% didn't go out. And there's a third opinion that says, Echad b'chamesh miyot yatza, one out of 500 went out, which is astonishing. So Rashi already brings it up to more realistic proportions, one out of five, but that means 80% didn't go out. So who are the 80%? Those are those who don't even come to the Seder. So there is a fifth son here in the picture, although he's not in the picture at all. But we're going to talk about the four sons. So the Haggadah itself, after the four questions, the question is, so where does the answer begin? Where does the answer begin? So you might say, the answer begins, Avadim ayinu lefaro b'Mitzrayim. So we were slaves in Egypt, to Paro in Egypt. Ve'yotzein Hashem lokeinu misham, v'yad chazakah azran etuya. God he took us out, he brought us out from Mitzrayim with tremendous power. V'yad chazakah azran etuya means with tremendous, tremendous power. Okay. That's it. That's the whole story. Because afterwards, the Haggadah digresses. And we don't get into the nitty-gritty of the story until a little bit later on. The Haggadah tells us that even if we were great scholars, afilu ayinu kulanu chachamim, kulanu nivonim, kulanu zkenim, kulanu yodim et haTorah. So you have here four types of very, very, very experienced Talmidei Chachamim. One is called a Chacham, one is called a Navon, and one is called a Zaken, and one is called a Yodea. What are these four branches of being knowledgeable? So number one, in the Rambam's Haggadah, he doesn't have four, he has three. Chacham, Navon, and Yodim. Kulanu Chachamim, we're all wise. Kulanu Nivonim, we're all with great understanding. Kulanu Yodim et haTorah, we were all full of knowledge. So these are the letters of Chabad, Chokhmah, Bina, and Da'at. So Chokhmah means absolute encyclopedic knowledge. Person who's a Chacham means he's got stored up in his memory much information. Whatever the subject matter may be, he's a Chacham. Navon means analysis, a person with analytical ability. The Chachamim use the phrase Lomed Davar Mitoch Davar, power of association, which means the person can analyze something and discriminate between different categories. That's a bal bina. And the third is de'a. De'a means practical application. So if somebody asks a question can I kasher a microwave or a dishwasher for Pesach? Well, the last thing you're going to do is open up a Rambam, a Shulchan Aruch. because there is no microwave or dishwasher in the Rambam or Shulchan Aruch. But what you do have to have is you have to have the theoretical knowledge. You need the knowledge. You need the power of association to take that theory and now start trying to find out what grouping a dishwasher might fall into, a type of grouping that does exist in the halakha. And then there has to be de'ah, practical application. Practical application. That's why the section of Shulchan Aruch that deals with psak halakha, decision making in prohibited and permissible, isur v'heter, is called yoreh de'ah. De'ah, that's what the Rav is doing. He's using de'ah. It's not encyclopedic. They say a story of a yeshiva boy who went for a smicha test, and the Rav, the Rosh Yeshiva, asked him, okay, so what happens when the milchik fork falls into the fleshet pot? So he was stifled. He says, I don't know. In the Shulchan Aruch, it says a spoon. So he didn't know what they had handled the question. The point is, in the Shulchan Aruch, you don't have every single case. If the Shulchan Aruch talks about a spoon, you can figure out what the story is with a fork. You have to, by means of association. So you have kulanu chachamim, kulanu nevonim, kulanu yodim et haTorah, experts in these three branches. And that's what the Rambam has. But nevertheless, in our Haggadah, we have kulanu zkenim, and zkenim can mean a variety of things. Could it be age, person who's a man of age, has gone through many, many sdarim in life, and therefore can say, you know, I've seen this already, you know, I've been there, done this, and why do I have to bother spending much time doing this again? Or it can mean something else. Zakein in halacha is zakein mi shekaneh chokhmah, is someone who acquired wisdom. If that's the case, then it's a duplication. It already says chacham, kulanu chachamim. So why do we have to have zakeinim? So Rav Soloveitchik said that it doesn't just mean a chacham. The word zakein is used in the context of somebody who is officially appointed to a beit din. He has a status of zakein. So the 70 of the Sanhedrin are called shivim zakeinim. A member of the Beit Din HaGadol, the supreme Beit Din, that rules privately against the decision of the Beit Din HaGadol is called zakein mamre. So the word zakein is a specific title to a specific type of Talmid Chacham. He's not just a Talmid Chacham, but he's a member of the Beit Din HaGadol. So he's a real zakein. Nevertheless, there's still what to say. And it's not just lip service, mitzvah lesaper. The more the merrier. The question is, why? I know the story already. I've heard it 25 times already. And then the Haggadah goes on to give us this story from Bnei Brak of a lineup of the greatest of the Chachmei HaMishnah. Master Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Loz Ben Asariah, Rabbi Shua, Rabbi Tarfon, Shayu Mesubim Ben Eben Rak, and they weren't just sitting there for half an hour; they were sitting there the whole night. Hayu Oskim B'Sipu Yitzim Mitzrayim Kol Ato Alayla, to emphasize the point: the more the merrier. And you can't get a better lineup than of Chachamim, Nevonim, Zkenim, and Yodim Et HaTorah. These five, the best of all the Tanaim of the Mishnah, and they were there all night. And then afterwards, you have the story of Baruch HaMakom, Baruch Hu, Baruch Keneged Arba'a Banim Debratua. What is this? So the Rav told us that the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzir Mitzrayim has to be understood on a triangular basis. The first is obviously storytelling. Fine, you have to tell the story. You have to get the details of the story in terms of its component parts. You can give it over superficially. You can give it over with great detail. And you will use the resources of Medrash to plow between the lines and between the words and between the letters to squeeze out additional information so that the composite is going to be an unbelievable picture of a story. Fine, that's one point, the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim. But then there's another point to the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim, and that is Hallel. Hallel. And the point that we know that Hallel is generally a mitzvah for daytime only. The Mishnah in the second chapter of Masechet Megillah tells us that the entire day is appropriate for the following mitzvot, A, B, C, D, and it's a very long list. One of the mitzvot is, let's say, shofar. So you don't blow shofar at night. It's only Yom Teruah Yelachem. It's Yom V'lo Laila. And you don't take the arbaminim, the four species, at night. And Brit Milah is done only in the daytime, bayom, bayom hashmini, not at nighttime. So we have all these mitzvot, that there are many mitzvot that are daytime mitzvot. One of the examples of the daytime mitzvot is Hallel. The exception is the night of the Seder, where there is Hallel. And it's an integral part of what Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim is all about. So much so that if you ask a general audience, why do we call the Haggadah by its name, Haggadah? So most people will cite the pasuk in Parshat Bo, V'gadeta levincha bayom ahu lemor, and you shall relate to your sons, but it means to anybody. It's explained in a wider sense. It's not just a biological son, but V'gadeta levincha bayom ahu lemor, such and such and such happened. The Avudram, Avudram is a middle-aged posek that spent time accumulating or gathering many, many minhagim in Ashkenaz. And Avudram, he says that, he cites another pasuk. We know that the proof, that the text that is used in the Haggadah to bring out the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim, of all things, doesn't come from the book of Shemot, where the story takes place. You think there can be no better source than Parshat Shemot, Va'era, Bo, B'Shalach. No, we turn to Sefer Dvarim, Parshat Kitavo, and we focus on the mitzvah of bringing Bikurim to Eretz Yisrael, first fruits from the seven species. As part of that mitzvah of bringing the first fruits of the seven species, the season being from Shavuot until Sukkot, and perhaps carrying over till Hanukkah, at least for some of the fruits like the olives, there is an additional part of the mitzvah to read certain psukim. How many psukim? 5 psukim. Arami rove ravi v'yered mitzrayma, v'yagor sham b'mteima'at. These are psukim that are household psukim because we know them from the Haggadah. And then in the Haggadah, we put them on a dissection table and we chop it up. And every single word comes to teach us and add more things. And then the parshanim come and add to the perushim, to the commentaries that have already been said. So we go to the Parshat Bikurim. There, the Torah says, Higadeti hayom l'Hashem Elokecha. It doesn't mean I'm coming to tell you a story. It comes to tell you I'm coming to thank you. The idea of Higadeti hayom is an expression of Hallel. And Avodram says that's another reason why the book is called the Haggadah. So on the one hand, it's called Haggadah because it relates a story, Vigadeta levincha, and it's also called Haggadah because it's a relating praise to God over what did happen. Higadeti hayom l'Hashem Elokecha from Parshat Kitavo. But the Rav said there's a third factor, and to the Volozhin Brisk dynasty, most probably the most important factor, and that is Seder night is an expression of Talmud Torah. Now, Talmud Torah is the whole year, day and night. V'agita bo yomam v'layla, says in Yeshua. So there's nothing special about Talmud Torah in any given time, but that's not true. We have specific occasions where you are to engage in specific syllabus of Talmud Torah. And hence, what you have here on Seder night is a specific commandment to deal with the understanding of the mitzvot of the night of the Seder as part and parcel of what Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim, relating the story of going out the Exodus from Egypt, is all about. It has to do with mitzvot. As the Rabbi Sadia Gaon says in the Emunot V'Deot, the Am Yisrael is defined by its Torah. You know, here in Israel, we have the first law of the Knesset, 1950, the law of the return, Chok HaShvut. It's been in the news the last few days because of Supreme Court decisions of conversions and recognition and so on. The absolute Jewish definition of who is a Jew is directly related to the people that is connected to the Torah. That's the definition. Everything else is important, very important even, but its connection to Torah is the integral definition of what Am Yisrael is all about. And hence, the idea of celebrating Yitziat Mitzrayim. So there are many facets in Yitziat Mitzrayim. We're going to see this next week with the four cups, what the various ideas of expressions of redemption are all about, because apparently there are four different strata of exile, and we're going to have to understand it in order to appreciate fully the drinking of the four cups, but the idea that a Pesach, the Yetziat Mitzrayim, is not just that we left Egypt. All right, now we're free. Okay, finished. We're out of there. That was just a necessary introduction to what it meant to become Klal Yisrael. And hence, when our Chachamim give the four allusions, Rimazim, to the four expressions of Geula, the last one being, V'lakachti etchem li la'am, and I will take you for a nation, that doesn't take place on Pesach, that takes place on Shavuot. And that's what the mitzvah of Svirat HaOmer is all about. It builds the bridge between Seder night, which is the day after Seder night. We connect the second day of Pesach with Chag HaShavuot. And therefore, we have a connection, an integral connection between that which we're doing Seder night and that which will be happening on Chag HaShavuot, the acceptance of Torah. And hence, on Seder night, there is a premium. We pay a premium to the mitzvot of the night. Pesach Matzah Maor. And indeed, this is the essence of what the Manashtana was all about. It was not question, it was about story. It was question about the mitzvot. And hence, what the Rav said is happening in this initial part of the Haggadah, after Avodah Meyinu, it teaches us the laws of Talmud Torah as they apply to Seder night. So number one, nobody's excused. Even if you're the absolute master of Torah, you're not excused. Because in the world of Torah, there's no such thing as completion. It doesn't exist. I remember the Rav telling me that that he suffered from like two allergies. In my book, I write about this a little bit. He suffered from two allergies. The first allergy was the printing press. And it wasn't something that he suffered alone. He got this Beyerusha inheritance from his grandfather and great-grandfather. The Soloveitchiks did not rush to print books. The Rav's first book that came out in print as a full-length book, he was almost 70 years old already. And it was nothing but an anthology of translations of speeches of Shiurim that he gave on Tshuva. And that came out. Now I have home 60 books from the Rav. I mean, after the Rav passed away, there's just so many Sfarim coming out, Shirim, philosophy, this, that, Siddur, Parshat HaShavua, Haggadah, Birkat HaMazon, whatnot. The Rav became very popular in the terms of books. But when he was alive, there were hardly any books, hardly any books. And the Sefer of his grandfather, the famous Navalei on the Rambam, Chidushei Rav Chaim Halevi on the Rambam, which there's no Beit Midrash in the world that doesn't have a few copies of it, that every Rosh Hashiva, before he gives a general shir, a shir kali, takes a peek and takes a look, see what Rav Chaim had to say about a particular Rambam. Rav Chaim never saw that book in print. Now, those of you who visited Poland in Warsaw Cemetery, where Rav Chaim is buried, he passed away in 1918, and he's brought to burial there in Warsaw, on his matzeva, it says, Hishir biktav yado, he left over in manuscript form, chibur, a compendium of Navalei on the Rambam. Rav Chaim never saw it. His sons put it out. And then when the sons, the Rav's father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, his uncle, Rav Yitzhak Zev, known as Rav Velvula Soloveitchik, their chidushim also were never printed in their lifetime. And the Rav too, this was an allergy of the family. And the reason was, you never complete Torah. Why at age 40 should I run and print a sefer, where at age 50, I'm going to think of a different idea? And then I'm going to have to run to the printing press and put out a second and third and fourth edition with all kinds of corrections. Leave it as manuscript. Keep correcting as you go on. And when Kadosh Baruch Hu calls you in, then it's time to print. And it's as simple as that. The second analogy was to a siyum masechet. Now, we celebrate a siyum. Those with daf yomi do it all the time. They finish it now. There's going to be a finishing of a masechet coming up, sachim. It couldn't be better timed, right before Pesach. I mean, this was not scheduled. This was just happened as such. But what's interesting is that the next masechet that's being studied, the last page of sachim is on March 22nd on a Monday. The next day is March 23rd on a Tuesday. We'll begin, those who are studying Daf Yomi, the next Masechet. It happens to be election day in Israel. And the Masechet that will be studied is Masechet Shkalim, It's all about shkalim. Can't get a better masechet to start on election day, because that's what election day here is all about. It's about using our shkalim for whatever. But the Rav did not promote siyum masechet. Now, he knew very well that siyum masechet has halachic basis. He knew it. In the Shulchan Aruch, it says that in the 9 days before Tisha B'Av, you can have a siyum with meat and wine, even though we abstain from meat and wine during the 9 days, from Rosh Chodesh Av to Tisha B'Av, yet it's a sudat mitzvah, and you can invite some friends and so on. With some limitations here, you're allowed to invite anybody who you'd normally invite Hanukkah time. Unlike, I remember in my days in the 60s, there were hotels in the Catskill Mountains, so people were there for the summer. What are you going to give people for dinner? Blintzes and you know, pasta with cheese. You know, they're paying good money. They want a steak. So they would invite a rabbi every single night of the 9 days to make a siyum. And then he would conveniently invite 500 guests of the hotel to their siyum. Rav Moshe Feinstein was really, really against that. Really against that. I mean, it shows, in my humble opinion, I mean, I don't want to say anything bad about great United States of America, but this was a value. You have to have a steak. You go to a hotel, you know. So therefore, you know, let's get a rav to give a siyum and so on. That's not what it says in Shulchan Aruch. It says you can make a siyum and invite the same people you would invite throughout the year. And that's it. Keep it small. But you're allowed to have meat and wine at such a siyum. The fact is, a siyum masechet has basis. And if it has basis, why was the rav against it? It wasn't that he was against it. He didn't think it was asur. He just felt it wasn't for him, because it gives the impression that you're completing something. And Torah, you never complete. Now, the truth is, at a siyum masechet, we echo that sentiment by always beginning the next masechet as well. So we take a stand and we say we haven't really completed anything, but nevertheless, we're celebrating a completion. So much so, the Rav's father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, who served before World War I as the town rabbi in Khasalovich in the Belarus, so he... it was very customary in most towns to honor the Rav with Chatan Torah on Simchat Torah, the ending of the reading of the Torah. But he rejected this kavod. He felt that, I don't want to give the impression that we finished anything. He accepted being Chatan Bereshit. You want to give me the Bereshit, Aliyah? That's fine. So I'll be happy to begin the Torah every single year. That's fine. But to end... The Rav was pretty much against the idea. This was a type of allergy that he had. And hence, afilu kulanu chachamim, kulanu nevonim, kulanu zkenim, kulanu yodim et haTorah, there's no finishing. He's always, always new. And this is how the Rav explained the Gemara that says that there ain't no domer, there's no comparison. Somebody who studies a perek 100 times to the one who studies 101 times. Now, you might say, why is that so? So most people interpret it because in the 101st time, you might think of something that you didn't dawn upon you the first 100 times. That can be. That very well can be. And hence, keep learning. Don't say, you know, I finished. You didn't finish. You're going to think of something else. Go on to 101. But the Rav said something interesting. He said the number of 100 is a psychological number of bringing it to some completion. And he gave examples from the world of sport. You have the 100 mile, and you have the 100 yards, and you have 100 meters in swimming and running and racing and so on. You know, it's a measure. In tests in school, you get 100. That means that's it. You've gotten the highest mark. You know, those teachers who would give 103, it didn't mean anything. 103 is fever, you know, you're sick in the winter. But 100 is the highest that you can get on a test. So the Rav said, by studying the Perek 101st time, you're declaring that there's nothing, no value to the 100. The 100 means nothing. It's not an end at all. But there's no difference between moving from 97 to 98, 98 to 99, 99 to 100, 100 to 101, 102, 103. Because when you go over that boundary of 100 and you realize that all you're doing is continuing, then you're going to study it for the 102nd time as well. So that's why it means even those greatest chachamim, there's still what to learn, still what to understand. Mitzvah l'saper v'chol ha'marbeh harei zeh meshubach. And then the Haggadah goes on to tell us, with the example of the five Chachamim in Bnei Brak, and then says that Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu. First of all, this is a type of Birkat HaTorah, and we say Keneged Abanim Dibra Torah. Why? When Mishlei Shlomo Melech says Chanoch LaNa'ar Al Pi Darko, you educate the youth by their way. By their way, what does that mean? By their way, that means kids are different. They're wired differently. That come with different backgrounds, and you have to approach things differently. The problem is, none of us really, unless there are some unique individuals here on online right now, none of us, I believe, had the schut of having the type of education that our Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik had. So let's just say a word about his unique education. And he never went to a yeshiva, basically. He never went to a yeshiva. Why? Well, he was a youngster. He was a youngster when the family moved from Pruzhan to Chasilovich, where his father became rabbi, as I mentioned. And he was sent to the cheder, like every other child went to cheder. The town was essentially a Lubavitch town. It was Chabad. Don't ask me how a Lubavitch town took a Litvak. There's a story here, and that'll take half the shiur, so I'm not going to bore you with the details. But Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, a thoroughbred Litvak, becomes the Rav of a Chabad town. So the Rav is a little boy, and they called him then Berala, Yosef Dov Ber Berala. So he was Berala. And he was young, 5, 6 years old, and the family went to Brisk to the grandfather, Rav Chaim, for a Pesach. And Rav Chaim wanted to see what his Berala has accomplished already in 3/4 of a year in the Cheder. So he asked him about certain psukim. He didn't know. He asked him about certain Mishnayot. He didn't know. He asked him about this. He didn't know. What did he know? He knew all the stories of the Rebbes of Chabad. All the stories. And there were many. And he was able to quote by heart sections of the Tanya. Tanya is a basic Kabbalistic work that the Chabad used. And this the Rav was able to do as a child. Rav Chaim told his son, you must take him out of this cheder and homeschool him. So the Rav was homeschooled, studied by his father. So here the Rav, his father is his Rav Buvak, his absolute principal teacher, and he becomes his father's Talmud Buvak. A very, very rare, rare situation. So rare that in the Hesed for the Rav passed away 28 years ago on Chol HaMoed Pesach, and there was a Levaya on Chol HaMoed with one Hesed, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Zichron LeBracha, the Rav's younger brother, and he spoke about this very, very point of the uniqueness of the Rav being a Talmud Muvik of his father, and his father having the Rav as his Talmud Muvik, and the Rav Soloveitchik being his Rav Muvik. It's a very, very unique situation. And this went on until the Rav was already 18, 19 years old, and he was already off to, in Warsaw already, he went for a short time to a Polish college, university, but then went off to Berlin. Yes, he had some connections in Berlin with Rav Chaim Heller, but he was never really pulled in the school. And whoever's not on mute, if you can please mute. Whoever is Larry, can you please mute? Thank you. Okay. So the Rav did not have a type of education that most of us had, and that impacted on his social development as well, but that's a different story. The fact is, we generally go to schools, and in schools you have 20 students, 30 students, whatever it may be. A teacher cannot possibly dedicate all of his or her attention to every single student with his or her individual needs. So we sacrifice. That's all we do. And hopefully at home, there's a supplement to that education on the more personal level. And some children benefit more from the home, some people less, whatever it may be. Those are the facts. And Chanoch LaNa'ar Al Pi Darko, the Haggadah tells us, you have keneged arba'a banim. And children will be classified into these four baskets. Now, where do Chachamim come up with this? So number one, when we say the Haggadah, people call it the Baal Haggadah. It's not the author of the Haggadah. The source of the four sons, there are two sources. One is the primary source that the Haggadah uses. It comes from the Medrash Mechilta. And the secondary source is actually from the Talmud Yerushalmi with very important variants, very important differences. So when you contrast one against the other, both have four sons, except the four sons are getting different answers in terms of these two sources when you try to understand the differences between those sources. So the Chachamim lifted out of the Torah. In Parshat Vetchanan, the Torah says, Ki yishalcha bincha machar lemor, if your son tomorrow means in the future, your children will ask, Ma ha'idot v'chukim v'mishpatim asher tziva Hashem elokeinu etchem, what are the signs and the laws and the statutes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has taught you? What is this all about? So the Torah gives an answer. V'amarta lebincha, you should tell your son, Avadim ayinu lefaro b'mitzrayim, we were slaves in Egypt, v'yotzein Hashem b'mitzrayim b'yad chazaka, but it goes on. V'yitein Hashem otot muftim gedolim v'ra'im v'mitzrayim v'faro v'chol beito d'einav, a type of summary of what went on in Mitzrayim. And there were great nisim, right? Ototu moftim. Ve'otanu hotzi misham. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out. Leman hevi otanu latet lanu et ha'aretz asher nishba labotenu. It wasn't to go out in the sake of going out, but the going out was so that we can go in and go into Eretz Yisrael. Vayetzaveinu Hashem lasot et kol ha'chukim ha'ela. And it's not just going into Eretz Yisrael, but going in with Torah. So that's what the objective was. The end game was to walk into Eretz Yisrael as a nation that is equipped with Torah. Ne'ir'at Hashem Elokeinu, metov lanu kol hayamim l'chayatenu kayom hazeh. So this is a more sophisticated answer. In the Haggadah, right after the Manashtana, we give a one-line response. Avadim ayinu lefaro b'mitzrayim. That's what we say. We don't give the entire speech here. But actually we do, not by quoting the Psukim. We explain, Avadim ayinu lefaro b'mitzrayim, but you have to understand that there was a reason that we went out of Mitzrayim. We went out of Mitzrayim so we can receive Torah and make it into Eretz Yisrael to apply the Torah. That's why we went out of Eretz Yisrael. The Meraglim, these scouts, 10 out of 12, what was their issue? When they brought back the report from Eretz Canaan, they actually never said a lie. They said everything was absolutely true. But, you know, it's how you say it sometimes that makes all the difference. But the issue at hand was not so much the facts and figures. It was, as the Ger Rebbe, the Sfat Emet, explains, they convinced Am Yisrael that it is preferable to stay in the desert. We received the Torah. And guess what? We have protection. God has the Amud HaAnan and Amud HaEsh. We don't have to have an army. We don't have to go to work. Food is coming down from Shemayim, the Man. We don't have to go shopping. Oh, you don't have to go shopping for clothing and shoes and new hats and whatnot, because the clothing did not deteriorate with time. So here we have this ideal existence. So what exactly did they do in the desert for the first year from the time of Yetziat Mitzrayim, from Matan Torah? What did they do? They didn't have cable TV. They didn't have balls. They didn't have ice skating and bowling alleys. You know, I'm just revealing my life now. They didn't have all these wonderful things to spend their time. Not even Yankee Stadium. They didn't have it. So they didn't have all these things. So what did they do? They sat and studied Torah. Man, woman, and child. That's what they did. Can you have a better existence than that? A kollel of 600,000 men studying Torah day in and day out, and their wives studying Torah, and their children studying Torah. And here the Meraglim come back, and they say, guess what? It's a great land. And look at these fruits. Wow. Great fruits. But you know, to get it, you're going to have to work. You're going to have to leave the Beit Midrash, and you're going to have to become farmers. And to have this land, you're going to have an army. And to run this country, you're going to have a government. And you're going to have business. And you're going to have this. And you're going to have that. It's Bittul Torah. The whole enterprise of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is Bittul Torah. They were successful in convincing Am Yisrael that L'shem Shamayim is a better option to stay in the desert. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, this is not why the Torah was given. And if you think that it was given for this reason, as we say here in Hebrew and slang, Efshar Lizgor Et Abasta, we can close the shop. And that's exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did. He closed the shop on that generation. It was the new generation that was given a fair shot to go into Eretz Yisrael. So what the Haggadah does here, it tells us that Avadim Hayim L'Tavam Mitzrayim, it's so that we become a nation of Torah studiers. That's what it's all about. And if you want to know when this particular mitzvah applies, so the Haggadah continues with the Medrash. Yahu Merosh Chodesh, perhaps this mitzvah of Sipur Yetzir Mitzrayim with all its ingredients begins with Rosh Chodesh Nisan. No, Hamud Lomar Bavur Zeh. It's only on this day, and it's only on this night when there's Matzah and Maror. You know, the original version is Pesach Matzah Umaror. When you have all of the three mitzvot of the night on the plate, on the table, that's when we have the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzir Mitzrayim. And the only question is whether it ends at midnight, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, or it ends at the end of the night, according to Rabbi Akiva. Now, that's an interesting machloket in itself. But it's at least the first half of the Seder night, and perhaps the entire night. Rabbi Akiva was the Marad Atra, was the Rav in town in Bnei Brak. And even though Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is one of the five participants at that Seder in Bnei Brak, they stay, they remain until the morning, because Rabbi Akiva was of the opinion that you can fulfill the mitzvah of eating Korban Pesach till the morning, and hence the mitzvah of relating the story, the unique mitzvah of relating the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim is the entire night. So you have this, the question of the Chacham. Ma'idot b'chukim b'mishpatim. That's what he's asking. And may perhaps homiletically, a dut is that which is a sign. Maror, to alert, we talk about Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. Maror is a sign to remember that which was a bitter experience for us. Never to forget. Never to forget that the bitter experience. Matchil Bignut. We start with things that do not bring great honor to Am Yisrael, but it's important to say, put it on the table, spell it out, so that we fully appreciate the chirut, the freedom at the end of the day. Chukim is Korban Pesach. Zot Chukata Pesach. That the Torah gives its nickname. And Mishpatim, what's left is Matzah. And the only thing I can say is that Mishpatim means dinim. There are so many dinim, so many halachot that revolve around chametz and matzah that very much applies to the word Mishpatim. Why Dot Bachukim? He's going to get the answer about halachot. And hence, in the Haggadah, when the question is Chacham Ma'u Omer, what does the Chacham say? Ma'idot v'chukim v'mishpatim asher tziva Hashem Elokeinu etchem. So the answer is v'af ata emor lo kilchot haPesach. Teach him dinim. And then of course everybody says, why this one halakha? Ein maftirin achar Pesach afikoman. That after you eat the Korban Pesach, there's no more dessert. Afikoman is a Greek word, and it means kinuach. It means dessert. So after the eating of the Korban Pesach, there's no longer any eating. Today, we call the matzah that we eat in place of the Korban Pesach, we call it the matzah of Afikoman. But Afikoman means dessert. So Ein Maftirin Acha Pesach Afikoman is the halakha that after the eating of the Korban Pesach, there's no more eating. So the question is, that's all you have to teach the Chacham, that halakha? Ba'af ata emor lo kilchot haPesach, Ein Maftirin Acha Pesach Afikoman. The Vilna Gaon throws in one word. Ad ein maftirin acha pesach afikoman. The Mishnah in Masechet Psachim, practically the last Mishnah, it's almost the last Mishnah. Ein maftirin acha pesach afikoman. Says the Vilna Gaon, you teach him the laws of Pesach from A to Z, from Aleph Atah, from beginning to the end, ad until the very last halacha. That's what it means. ad ein maftirin acha pesach afikomai. So you're teaching the chacham halachot. And then comes the next question that's found in the Chumash, in Parashat Bo. Vayaki yomru alechem b'nechem ma avodah zot lasan lechem. What is all this activity about? And there's an answer, a very legitimate answer, very positive answer, I may say. Vamartem, you shall say, zeva pesach hu l'shem, asher pasach al batei b'nei Yisrael b'mitzrayim, b'napot mitzrayim v'pateinu hitzil, v'yikod ha'am yishtachavu. There was the Korban Pesach in Egypt, and Kadosh Baruch Hu jumped over, skipped over the homes that had the blood on the doorposts, and so on. It's a very appropriate answer. So when he's asking a question, he gets a nice answer. Why in the Haggadah, the Chachamim said, this is the Rasha, ma avodah zot lachem. And it's many times when the teachers teach this in school, they say it with an intonation, what's going on here? What is this all about? In a type of pejorative way. And not, can you explain to me what exactly is happening here? You can say the same words, you can say it somewhat differently. So again, it was the Vilna Gaon who said, with regard to the question of the Chacham and the Tam, the Torah uses the word Yish'alcha, when the son will ask. So indeed, the Chacham asks one way, and the Tam asks another way. The Chacham says, Ma idot v'chukim v'mishpatim? And the Tam says, Mazel, what is this? What is this? That's all. But with regard to the question, Ma avodas zot lachem, does not say She'ela, doesn't say yes anything. It says, Vayaki yomru alechem b'nechem. And if he's going to tell you, what is this all about? That's not a question. May have a question mark at the end of the sentence, but it's not a question. He's not interested in a response. And hence the Vilna Gaon said, take a look. With regard to the other two, the question of the Chacham and the Tam, whatever the questions may be, the Torah responds, Ve'amarta levincha, and you shall tell your son such and such and such. But with regard to the question, Ma avodah zot lachem, it should have said, Va'amartem livnechem, and you shall tell your children. It doesn't say that. It says, Va'amartem, and you shall say, Zevach Pesach hu l'Hashem. So the Vilna Gaon says, it's the person leading the Seder, turning his head from the son who said, Ma avodah zot lachem, so that no one else in the family becomes contaminated by this kind of talk. So the family head will then explain to the others, Zevach Pesach hu l'Hashem. But the person who asked, Ma avodah zot lachem, so we silence him. That's what the Medrash means, hakei achina. Doesn't mean you punch his mouth, but you silence him. You silence him and say, Ilu haya sham, if he was there, he would not have been redeemed at all. He would have most probably be part of those who perhaps even assimilated. Before I mentioned that there may have been the fifth son, but he could have been part of that chevra as well. And then there's the She'eno Yodea Lish'ol. So, you know, sometimes we get the opinion that the four sons are children. They may not be children. They may be adults in their own right, but they don't have background and they're not curious. I once heard an American rabbi explain the Arba'a Banim is, I believe it came from Rabbi Harry Wahlberg, Zichrono Lebracha, one of the most excellent, excellent homiletic experts in the United States, one of the greatest Arshanim. I believe he said that there are four different types of generations from the big influx of Jews from Eastern Europe to the United States in the 1880s. Says that influx, many of them were somewhat Shomer Shabbat. They knew, they came with background. So that was the Ben HaChacham. But their sons, they had to Americanize very, very quickly. So they just left it all. They just felt they had to become American and they just put their Judaism on the side. Their son, they knew they had a grandfather who was still putting on tefillin. Father didn't wear tefillin anymore. He was the Ben Arasha. This grandson is asking the grandfather, Mazot, what's this, what's this, what's this, what's this? And that son has a son who doesn't even ask his grandfather because his grandfather was the Ben Arasha. So he's the She'eno Yodea Lish'ol. I mean, it can be diplomatically put perhaps in a better language, but the idea that sometimes you have degeneration with generations as we go. So you have here, Vaya ki yisholcha bincha, ki vaya ki yomru alechem b'nechem, vaya ki yisholcha bincha leimor, mazot, ve'amarta elav, and you tell them, v'chozek yad osi Hashem l'Mitzrayim, y'beit avatim. So what you have here, the She'eno Yodea Lish'ol is covered by the blanket phrase "Vigadat alavincha," and the Rambam tells us that actually, and he says that if there is a son that hasn't opened his mouth, so we have an obligation to teach him. In Perek Zayin of Ilchot Chametz Matzah Lachabet, Rambam says mitzvah lehodia lebanim afilu lo shalu shneimar vigadat alavincha. Interestingly enough, if we were to ask a general audience, a knowledgeable general audience, what is the proof text from the Torah of the mitzvah of relating the story of the Exodus from Egypt, 9 out of 10, if not 99 out of 100, will say, Vigadata Levincha. The Rambam does not bring this as a proof text. He brings an obscure source. It's from the Mechilta de Rashbi, Mechilta of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, not the standard Mechilta. And there it says, Zachor et hayom hazeh asher yetzatem mimitzrayim. Should remember the day that you exited Egypt, kemosh amar, as it says, Zachor et yom haShabbat. What the Rambam is really saying, that sometimes the word Zachor doesn't mean to remember, not to forget, but it means to give articulation, spell it out verbally. And Zachor et yom haShabbat lekadsho means, on Friday night, we have to spell it out with words about God being the creator of the world. And that's what Kiddush is all about. So just like Zachor et Yom HaShabbat means to speak the story, tell the story, so too Zachor et Yom HaZeh Asher Yetzatem Mitzrayim. Why does the Rambam not bank on Vigadat Levincha? Because if a person was making a Seder alone, then the person would be excused from telling the story. If there's nobody to relate it to, if a person does not have children, is not sitting in a place where there are others, even if we expand the word Bincha to others, no matter how many others, but there are people who had, last year in Corona, there were people here in Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laretz who made starim alone, in all kinds of senior citizens' residences where they were confined to the room. I can tell you with experience in my family, there were people who made starim alone. And it's very, very, very sad, very, very sad. I mean, I know Israeli soldiers who sometimes are on the border patrol and they're making a seder alone. That has happened. We do have that. But that's a really different circumstance. So if you're alone, so perhaps you're exempt from the mitzvah of Sipur Yisrael Mitzrayim. So Rambam says, no. There is a mitzvah, Zachor et Hayom HaZeh Asher Yetzatem. Everybody has this mitzvah. Now, furthermore, if there are others to talk to, the mitzvah is upgraded. Vigadat Levincha is already an upgrade. And he says, the first thing is, if you have a child that's not speaking, that is to say, not curious enough, you stimulate him. Shenemar Vigadat Levincha. But then he says, "Lefi dato shel ben aviv melamdo." Now it becomes a question of chanoch lanar pi darko. You have different children in the family, different levels of intelligence. And the Rambam says, "Keitzad imaya katan utipesh." So the word "tipesh" in the Rambam is not a pejorative term of calling somebody a tipish. As a Yiddish, it sounds very, very bad. But it means somebody who's not intelligent or he's young and inexperienced. Where does the Rambam get the word "tipish"? It's interesting that in the parallel source in the Talmud Yerushalmi, it doesn't say tam, but says tipesh. So tipesh is used in this context. And what's interesting also is that with regard to the rasha, in the Yerushalmi version, where the rasha indeed says ma avodah zot lachem, and here it's explained ma ha-torah hazeh sha'atem matrichim aleinu b'chol shana. What is this big burden that you're bothering us every year with? Mikivan shotziyat atzmo min haklal, he has removed himself from the community. Afata emor lo, you will tell them. Bavur ze asa Hashem li, God did this for me, not for you. Li asa, le'oto ha'ish lo asa. Now I'm going to stick my neck out here and suggest the phrase oto ha'ish is a phrase used in rabbinic literature for Yeshua, for the beginning advent of Christianity. And it is possible that dealing with Chazal in the days of the Mishnah, when they had to add the 19th bracha v'lam hashinim against the minim, and the minim were the early Hebrew Christians. And here the Chachamim were saying that there is a son who could be one of them, and he is the Ben HaRasha. And here the Yerushalmi says it very almost clearly. It's still it's not as clear, but it's pretty close, because we do know that the phrase oto ish, we know who it means. And here the Mishnah, the source says li asa, for me he did, לאותו האיש לא עשה. אילו היה אותו האיש במצרים, לא היה ראוי להיגאל משם לעולם. He never would have been redeemed. And here we know that Christianity, one of the things that divided Christianity from Judaism was the observance of practical mitzvot. It was denied and so on. And hence, what the version in the Yerushalmi perhaps is suggesting, it's an anti-Christian polemic, that these are the Rishaim who we are talking about in the context of the four sons. Many people contrast the Tam and the She'eino Yode Lishol, the Tam and the Chacham, Ma'idot V'chukim V'mishpatim, and then the Tam who says Ma'azot. So Ma'azot gets a very simple answer, Mechozek Yad Hotzian Hashem B'Mitzrayim, and the Chacham gets the Halachot. In the Yerushalmi version, it's just the opposite, and causes havoc to all the understandings of the four sons. The Tam, who's the Tipesh, he's told to be taught Halachot, Kilchot HaPesach, Ad Ein Maftirim Machar Pesach Afikoman, and the Chacham is told the story in detail. So it would take too long now to try to analyze what the Talmud Yerushalmi has in mind here by flipping the responses between the Chacham and the Tam. But I'd like to conclude with a very, very important idea of Reb Shamshon Nofal Hirsch. Shamshon Nofal Hirsch speaks in Parshat Toledot in anticipation of Parshat Vayechi. So you remember Parshat Vayechi, Yaakov Avinu has all his sons sitting down, and he wants to reveal to them something about the end of days, Achir Tehamim. That really never happens, but he gives them brachot. And it's interesting, all of them receive something, and something very, very appropriate. There's a lengthy section in the Arbar Benel, that's actually Kefal HaLashon. There's no such thing as a short section in the Arbar Benel. So it's a section in the Arbar Benel where he explains in detail what Yaakov Avinu was doing with each son and explaining to them why Yehuda is going to be the king and all of you have certain shortcomings. So the brachot, there are brachot with shortcomings and each shevet was supposed to accept it as such. But Shamshon Nofal Hirsch sees it somewhat differently. He takes the brachot of Yaakov and contrasts it also, or compares it, or adds on. He complements it with the brachot of Moshe Rabbeinu at the end of the Torah, and shows that each shevet was designed for a specific activity in Eretz Yisrael. Exactly what we talked about before with regard to the Meraglim. He says, you cannot give a bracha to the 12 sons that they're all going to be sitting and learning all the time. He says it openly. You can't have a country like that. It's not going to work. You must have people who are going to be the warriors, and going to be the business people, going to be international salesmen, and going to in commerce, and going to be the farmers, and going to be this, and going to be that. Every shevet had a specific activity that was tailor-made to the talents of that particular shevet. And in that way, Am Yisrael as a collective whole would be able to run a country the way it should. And I will jump to modern days. I happen to have some good news. Believe it or not, in these days of Corona, there's a lot of talk about Charedim. You know that there's a lot of movement here in Eretz Yisrael of the youngsters of the Haredi communities actually to seek out professional education, job education. They're not going to the university, but they're going to professional schools so that they can go to work. It's very, very positive development. And some of them have actually enlisted in the army. That's even more positive development. It's a development which we're going to see. It's only growing. It's not going the other way. It's only growing. And the corona actually is going to be another stimulus for this to happen at even greater pace, because where 2 years ago, you know, the owning of a computer at home and having internet was worse than eating chazer and Yom Kippur, now all of a sudden, people felt that they were locked out of the modern world without modern day communication. And lo and behold, much of the modern telecommunication is now entering into the homes, some through the back door, some through the front door, but it's happening, which means we're going to have a more enlightened Charedi community in the next generation, and we think it's only livracha here in Eretz Israel, because the Charedi community is multiplying, Baruch Hashem, and poru vayishutzu vayirbu vayatzmu b'maod maod, and therefore we cannot have a country where everybody is going to be sitting and learning in a koilo. It's not going to happen. But as Rav Shamshon for her said, but what's happening actually is a change, a slight change, but that slight change is also developing. And I think I see this also as something very positive. And the last piece of good news, by the way, is that it appears that we're slowly but surely, but at least in the right direction, pulling out of Corona here in Israel. The numbers are going down every single day. We have 60% of the country vaccinated already. And by the end of March, we will have 85% of the country vaccinated. In all likelihood, we're going to start vaccinating children maybe before Pfizer finishes their results. And the simple reason is Pfizer knows that they have the best laboratory in the world in the state of Israel. They're working with 20,000 people. We're working with 9 million people. And we have done better with the results already. And that's the reason, by the way, Pfizer has agreed to give us all the doses way beyond the pace of any other country, because they knew that they will be able to use the results, the data, for their personal, their uses as well. And we know already that we had no choice, but certain children had to be vaccinated. And we know the results of those vaccinations already, and they're not damaging at all to the children. And hence, we have 3 million children here, and those 3 million children are going to be vaccinated. Certainly, and God willing, once we get that vaccination up. So there are variants and mutations, and we have our eye on that as well. But the country is going back to normal. I am going for Shabbat to Eilat with the AACI, Association of American and Canadian Immigrants. A weekend, the first one, leaving the house for a Shabbat. Wow. And it's big news here in Israel. And the hotels are opening up for Pesach. That's big news. And people are sitting down in the cafes and in the restaurants. That is very big news. I can tell you that in Tel Aviv 2 days ago, when they opened up the restaurants, people were kissing the tables. And they were just
literally kissing
the tables. You don't understand that cafes in Israel is a way of life. And to be locked out of it was to be enslaved. So when we say on Seder night, "B'chol dover dor chayav adam lirot et atzmo ki'ilu hu yatzam mimitzrayim," we don't have to go back 3,500 years and figure out what it meant to be enslaved. Enslaved, you don't have to be politically enslaved. We were enslaved because of the situation. And Baruch Hashem, we're getting out of it. And now Pesach time. And I think we will take it to heart and hopefully learn much about humility and modesty and trying to develop a type of lifestyle that took some of the excesses and leave that behind us. God willing, we should have a scenario now of Pesach, B'simcha. I wish each and every one of you, wherever you may be, it should also be so, Pesach, you know, B'simcha. We say Chag Kasher B'Sameach. It's certainly going to be Kasher. With 3 Hashgachot already on bleach, it's got to be Kasher. But it should be Sameach. That's really, really important. Okay, next week in Mirz Hashem, we'll talk about the 4 cups of wine. Anybody want to bring 4 cups of wine to the screen? You know, so keep putting you in the right mood. You're perfectly welcome. So, Erev Tov.
Thank you very, very much.
I called Sherwin. Sherwin is not hosting this.
Jim, according to the number 3 explanation by the Rav, so then why isn't Rabban Gamliel Seder in the Haggadah? Because so, there they did discuss mitzvot.
Right. So Rabban Gamliel Seder is actually the response to the Manishtana. That's really the real answer. It is the question. Why? The question is about Kovitz. The question is about Morrow. The question is about Korban Pesach.
So I'm sure.
And Rabbi Gamliel comes to give him.
Because it's from New York. It's the Torah organization in New York.
Ruby, can you put it on mute, please? Okay. So the Ram Gamliel in the three mitzvot, Pesach, Matzah, Maror, is actually giving the in a synopsis format the response to the Manishtana. That's what he's really doing.
I meant the story, but I guess you're answering answer.
The story.
You know, in the Gemara, right? It talks about Rabban Gamliel Seder, doesn't it?
The Seder and Lud.
Yeah.
Seder and Lud. Okay, so, you know, historians have something to say about this, whether this was the issue of the Bar Kokhba revolution, and they were being discussed clandestinely. And that's why Rabbi Akiva was out of visual sight, no windows there, and there were students outside keeping watch, vigil, that Roman sentries were not coming. And indeed, Rabbi Akiva perseveres. Rambam says there were discussions, but Rabbi Akiva wins the argument and gives his backing with the others to Bar Kokhba. But unfortunately, it fizzled. Unfortunately. Tragically fizzled.
Thank you.